Chapter 2. The Harpooner. As Peter Coffin's footsteps disappeared back down the stairs, I looked around the room. There was no furniture except the bed and the old sea chest, and there were a few things which had to belong to the harpooner. There was a folded hammock and a large, soft seaman's bag, which no doubt held everything the harpooner possessed. Above the fireplace, there was a small piece of mirror, and by the bed, there stood a tall harpoon. After looking round the room, I took off my coat and trousers, then blew out the candle, and quickly jumped into bed, because the room was so cold. A while later, I was nearly asleep when I heard the sound of footsteps and saw a bit of light under the door. "This must be the harpooner at last," I thought. "I'll lie here and won't speak unless he speaks to me." Holding a lamp in one hand and his terrible New Zealand head in the other, the stranger entered the room without looking toward the bed. He pulled the seaman's bag open and pushed the horrible head down inside it. When he had done that, he turned around, and what a shock I got. What a face. It looked yellow and dark purple, and I realized that its dark parts were all tattoos. I had never seen a man from the South Sea Islands, but I knew that they had tattoos and decided that this man must be a South Sea Island cannibal. He looked very strange to me, but then I thought, it's only his outside, isn't it? A man can be honest in any sort of skin. Then he took off his hat, a new, tall, black hat, and I realized that he had no hair except for a small piece above his forehead. I am not a coward, but I felt afraid of the strange man, so afraid that I could not speak to him. He started to get undressed, and I saw that his whole body was covered with the same dark square tattoos as his face. Then I saw him go to his jacket, which he had hung over a chair, and pull a little statue of a person and a piece of ship's biscuit out of a pocket. He put the statue in the fireplace and laid the biscuit in front of it, making strange noises. It seemed as if the statue was a god and he was praying to it. I was feeling more and more uncomfortable. Then the stranger took a tomahawk pipe from his bag, lit it from the lamp, and started to smoke. The next moment, he put out the lamp, and this cannibal, with his tomahawk pipe between his teeth, jumped into bed with me. I could not help it and shouted out, "Stay where you are, keep quiet, and let me get up and light the lamp again." But I quickly realized from his replies that he did not understand me.
"Who you?" he said. "You not speak me. I kill you."
And the lighted pipe began moving wildly around in the dark.
"Tell me who you be," he said.
"Landlord, Peter Coffin," I shouted. "Landlord, save me."
Hot tobacco ash was falling all around me, so I thought that soon the bed would be on fire. But then the landlord came into the room with a candle in his hand. Jumping from the bed, I ran to him.
"Don't be afraid now," said he, smiling at me with great amusement. "Queequeg would never hurt anyone."
"Stop laughing at me," I shouted. "Why didn't you tell me that the harpooner was a cannibal?"
Peter Coffin was still smiling.
"I thought you would understand when I told you he was selling New Zealand heads around the town. Now go to sleep, both of you. Queequeg, this man is going to sleep here. Do you understand?"
Queequeg was still sitting in the bed and smoking his pipe.
"You get in,"
he said to me, using his tomahawk pipe to point to the other side of the bed. He did this politely, and I looked at him closely. He was actually a handsome man with a friendly-looking face. Why was I scared? I thought. This man is a human being just like me.
I spoke to the landlord again. Please ask him to stop smoking and I will get into bed. It's dangerous to smoke in bed.
Peter Coffin explained this to Queequeg, who at once put down the tomahawk pipe. Again, he pointed politely to the other side of the bed, moving away from it to give me more space.
Good night, landlord, I said. You may go.
I got into bed and quickly fell asleep. I never slept better in my life. When I first woke up in the morning, I found Queequeg's arm thrown across me in a friendly way. You might have thought that I was his wife. For a while, I lay there wide awake, but I must have fallen asleep again, because when I next woke up, Queequeg was standing next to the bed holding his harpoon. He pulled the pointed metal end from its wooden handle, then went across the room and, looking in the small piece of mirror, shaved, or rather, harpooned his cheeks. I quickly got up too and shaved, but not with a harpoon. Then we both went downstairs for breakfast. The bar was now full of sailors, nearly all whalemen with brown faces and thick beards, all wearing thick jackets because it was so cold.
Here's breakfast,
cried the landlord, opening a door into the other room. Breakfast was a strange meal. I was expecting to hear lots of talking and many stories of the sea, but all the men were quiet, as if they were not comfortable sitting round a table together. Queequeg was obviously comfortable, though. Wearing his new hat, he sat there as if he was used to eating socially with strangers. Another strange thing was that while we all drank coffee and ate hot rolls, Queequeg ate meat, just as Peter Coffin had said. When breakfast was over, Queequeg and the other men went back into the bar. He lit his tomahawk pipe and sat there quietly smoking while I went out for a walk. Returning later to the Spouter Inn, I found Queequeg alone in the bar. I suggested that we both smoked. He quietly offered me his tomahawk pipe, and we sat there handing the pipe backward and forward between us. This peaceful time smoking together made us friends. He seemed to like me as much as I liked him, and when our smoking was over, he pressed his forehead against mine. He told me we were now friends, and he would die for me. Later, we went back to our room. He gave his dried New Zealand head to me, and taking 30 silver dollars from his tobacco bag, he divided them into equal parts and pushed half toward me. I tried to refuse his money, but he put the dollars into my trouser pocket, and I decided to let them stay there. Then Queequeg, as he had done the previous night, started to pray. He took out his little god and placed the ship's biscuit in front of it. I could see that he wanted me to join him. Now, I am a Christian, but Queequeg was a man like me, and a friend. When I thought about it, I realized that I would like Queequeg to join me in my Christian prayers, so I decided to join him in praying to his little god.